It's time for Windows Weekly, our last fresh episode of 2016. Paul and Mary Jo gather together. We'll talk about the highlights and lowlights of 2016, and a very special visitor will stop by. No, it's not Santa Claus. It's Microsoft's Chief of Marketing, Chris Cappicella. It's all next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 497, recorded Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. Go for the donut. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/windows. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code Windows to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Microsoft and what's going on in Redmond. And this is our last show of 2016. Next week will be a best of Windows Weekly. But I think for this show, you've brought one of the best of Windows Weekly's guests from 2016. Paul Thurrott is here from Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley from AllAboutMicrosoft.com.
I still have no idea what that means.
I'm not going to stop. It's good. I like it. Yeah. Paul, introduce our guest of the day today.
I don't know this man.
Oh, Mary Jo. introduce our guest of the... Who is sitting there in between you? This guy.
That guy is Chris Cappicella, who is the Chief Marketing Officer for all of Microsoft. Woo-hoo! And he was one of our best guests on Windows Weekly last year, and he agreed to come on again for some crazy reason.
Not just last year.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back. Back in my attic, just like last year. but it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to today, so thank you.
Well, don't, because we have some hard-hitting questions this time.
No, the first thing I said when we got Chris on the line is how much I love this Surface Studio. I think you guys just knocked it out of the park with this one.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, we've been pleased with their early reception, that's for sure. And I'm glad you're enjoying it.
And to match your shot, because you have a Surface Studio box behind you, we've moved the Surface Studio box here into the studio.
Just there it is. I love it.
Love that owl, by the way. The wallpaper
is awesome.
The iconic
owl.
Yeah. Just fantastic.
It's a beautiful image on the screen itself. So the team decided to put it on the box as well. And I'm actually blocking a kind of unsightly kind of closet thing in my attic that I didn't really know how to block out. And my wife is like, why don't you just put that empty box up there?
We got it out of the living room.
Exactly.
Do you use the Surface Studio?
You know, I got a pre-release one at work, and I've been using it there maybe, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks before we had the big device launch day. For personal use, we knew that we would probably run out, so we decided to not buy any our own personal use. But we were allowed to buy them as gifts. So I have a couple of architects that I happen to know. And this box that you see behind me I've done the unboxing experience, and now I get to rebox it and wrap it and deliver it later.
Let me give you a fun idea, because I do this to someone in my family every Christmas. Don't rebox it. Wrap it up in its exact shape. And just put it under their tree like that. It's hilarious. Like, I gave my wife a laptop one year that was like an open laptop, like the L-shaped one. We've done like a lamp, a bicycle.
Oh, you could just, you mean wrap the computer itself.
Yeah, exactly.
So they could see the shape.
Yeah,
I love it.
I'm very pleased to hear that Microsoft does the same tradition that we do every Christmas called family hold back. I don't know if there's going to be enough turkey.
Yes.
Let the guests eat first.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's kind of amazing.
Wondering, like, did you poison it? How come no one's eating the food?
So you all, as much as I'm sure everybody at Microsoft wanted to have one of these in their office, held back on it.
Yeah, at least for personal use. You know, we had obviously some pre-release hardware.
Well, you have to test it, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of people had. But we just decided, hey, you know, we obviously knew when the pre-order was going to go live, and we were in New York City, and we just decided, why don't we not have, you know, 5,000 Microsoft people ordering the first 5,000 units. Yeah. And so we'll see how well it did. I abided by it, but who knows? I think people may have jumped the gun a little bit anyway.
I was very grateful that I ordered it so quickly because I got mine ahead of time, faster than you even said.
Like you were a couple days. You did it in the first couple of days, if I recall.
I did. Yeah, on this show. Just,
And then we were able to get it a little faster than we might have expected, I think.
That's really pleased. Said December 12th, and I got it November 30th. So I was now you know, because we mentioned this before the show, that we have replaced the hard drive already.
Yes.
But it made it. We put an SSD, two SSDs in, made a big difference in the overall speed. And at this point, I'm thrilled with it. And we've got the slowest model. I got the base model. Really,
that's great.
Really great, yeah.
It was fun to see you sort of take that thing apart.
Yeah.
You mentioned this before we started the show, but just for the people who, you know, are going to check in later, you said that you've been hearing from people in the stores that they really want to get this display separate, right?
Yeah, so at the Microsoft retail stores, you know, one of the fun things about having those stores is you hear directly from customers right away. And so the day in New York, we were with you guys and launching the product, you know, that night we had them in stores. And within the first few days, you know, you hear that immediate feedback of, you know, hey, people like the dial, they like the pen or whatever. And one of the most frequently asked questions in the store is, hey, can I just get the monitor without the CPU and hook up my existing machine to it? Because the monitor is really beautiful. And so that's something that has been an early request, I would say, in the retail store experience.
Yeah. Listen, I will angle my camera so you can see me doing this. I will get on my knees here and beg you.
Oh, God.
Beg you to do this.
Yeah. I think we've been surprised by that. You know, we obviously designed the whole thing to work together, and we weren't thinking of it as kind of a monitor. But, you know, it's definitely feedback we've heard loud and clear.
Well, and also, it's hard to forget, hard to remember, rather, that this is Microsoft's very first desktop computer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you didn't get to see other people's designs and stuff like that. It's not designed in a vacuum, but nevertheless, very impressive for first time out of the box.
No, we're really pleased, and the production's gone well, and the early quality looks great. The reviews and the ratings on different websites are we're really pleased with them. So that's just a great position to be in. We're obviously ramping up production, and we're excited to have a product that people are really kind of surprised by and really thrilled by. But you know, we'll learn a lot. We'll see what people don't like, and you know what software they want us to do, and how they want the dial to be better integrated into the things they use every day. And you know, we'll get a lot of feedback in the next, you know, probably 3 months that we'll be listening for.
I had my finger hovered over the button to buy a second one.
Go for it.
Well, I want it at home, but and I'm sure this is not what you want me to say, but I did think that's exactly what would be going on, is that there'd be assessment, thinking about what we're going to do for the next one. And I know there'll be another one soon enough, within a year. I think I'm going to wait for the second generation because I want more power in that thing. Mm. I love that thing, but I feel like it's a little anemic.
Mm, I see. Yeah, I've been using the sort of the higher
end. You have the high end one. I'm sure that's faster.
And, you know, for what I do, it's been awesome. But of course, I'm not a high end designer or, you know, a media person that's mixing video.
Neither am I. It's plenty fast for what I'm using it for. I just want more power. You understand that?
Yeah. No, the funny thing is, we have learned over the years that the first units you build should be the highest end units.
Yeah.
Because the people who order first are the ones who want everything. Even with that skewing what we built, we still found that we underinvested in the 2 terabyte, you know, big hardcore one. And that's what everyone sort of on that first week really wanted to buy. So what you say is what we see in the results too.
Hmm. So besides Surface, I'm curious what else you think some of the highlights were for the year from Microsoft, because last year we did this, we said to you, what did you think the highlights were? And it was interesting to hear what you thought the high points were for the year.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it's a pretty rich canvas to kind of work on because the company mm-hmm. is so broad. For me, there are a couple of things that I would call out that I'm pleased with. One was the continued recognition that the world's commercial cloud is really living in Seattle with Amazon and Microsoft as the two main competitors in a very big and exciting market of sort of cloud computing, particularly for commercial use. And that means artificial intelligence, that means machine learning and predictive analytics, that means all sorts of different things, whether it's Dynamics or Office or what have you. But I think that continued drumbeat that is where things are happening is really, really positive for both companies and for the Seattle area. The second thing that I think we've been really pleased with, or I thought of as a real highlight, was the introduction of Microsoft Teams. You know, this is this essentially, you know, chat-based workspace for Office 365. And this product really didn't exist, I don't know, 18 months ago or 15 months ago. And the speed at which we were able to build this was pretty staggering for a guy like me who's been around for a long time and seen, you know, how long it takes us to build something new. To go from basically nothing to where we are today has just been awesome. And I think the reception around the product has been bigger than I expected. There's been more chatter about it. There's been more enthusiasm around it. We didn't do some big glitzy launch like we did for Windows 10 and for Surface Studio. And yet it's the conversation that customers want to have with us again and again and again. Hey, what is this Microsoft Teams thing? Do I own it? Can I use it? When's it going to be done? And so that, I think, was a really pleasant surprise for us. The other one, of course, I would say is mixed reality and the energy that we see around mixed reality, whether it's, you know, lower end experiences that we talked about, you know, maybe a $300, you know, headset that plugs into a PC, or whether it's HoloLens, the energy around mixed reality is just super, super high. And to have Windows be kind of at the center of that, we think is really important for the company long term. And I think that while it's not something people are buying in droves, it's a huge conversation that's happening sort of in the industry itself. And then finally, I guess the fourth one I'd call out is just the speed at which Windows 10 is being adopted in enterprise is really important. You know, we publish the broad numbers of, you know, 400 million active devices on Windows 10, et cetera. But for us, the enterprise adoption is really, really important. And we've seen customers just really be pretty eager to roll it out. And that those would be four things that I'd call out. There are many others, but those would be ones that, as I reflect on the year, I think are probably pretty fundamentally critical for the ecosystem around Microsoft.
Yeah. We, you know, Paul and I last week on the show were talking about, for us, one of the big surprises of the year was Windows on ARM and what you guys announced in Shenzhen, and we were kind of going back and forth about how big a deal we think that's going to be. And I'm curious if you could kind of put that in context too. Like, how big a deal do you think that's going to be for Microsoft?
Oh, I think it's pretty fundamentally critical. When you think of silicon diversity, we believe it's very important for Windows to have that, and for the Windows ecosystem to have that. And we're great partners with our traditional chip manufacturers for Windows. But the benefits that ARM brings are, you know, pretty well understood. And so we think the partnership we're doing with Qualcomm, and we announced at WinHack in China, as you mentioned, is super important. You know, we've been down this road before, as you guys all well know, but we're eager to do a much better job this second term around. And frankly, we think the world is different than it was when we tried this the first time with Windows RT. And so we've obviously been working on it for a long time, and we thought that this was the right time to start talking about it publicly. And 2017 should be the year that we start to see hardware, you know, from hardware partners that obviously use that ARM-based approach. And we're excited about it. Tempered, given our first attempt, but excited that we think it's a different world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think of the first demos. You know, the first demo of Windows on ARM 4 or 5 years ago was, look, we can print. The first demo this year was, look, we're running Photoshop. You know, it's a different world. You know, that's very interesting.
Yeah, totally. And obviously being able to run Win32 apps was one of the huge not being able to run Win 32 apps was a huge barrier to RT. And so we think that's a big step forward. Photoshop was one that we demoed, Office, et cetera. That'll be pretty core. And of course, the emulation is really only about the CPU calls. The rest of the experience is going to be native Windows right. on ARM. And that, I think, is important as well.
When you look back at last year, I mean, maybe from more of a negative standpoint, if you will, I mean, yeah. are there, you know, regrets or things you might have done differently? I don't mean you personally, but as a company, I mean, you know, I today did my year end review. No, I mean, there are always pluses yes. and minuses to any year. I mean, are there anything like that sticks out for you? I mean, I just deceded. I mean, I think of the way that Microsoft really aggressively pushed Windows 10 might have been. Scale back a little bit, for example. I mean,
totally.
Anything like that for you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a super long list. As we talked about last year, there was plenty last year, and there's, of course, plenty this year. We're always trying to sort of push the envelope, and sometimes we do it well, and sometimes we make mistakes. But for me, I mean, a couple of things. Just the most obvious one, you know, the selling off of the feature phone business and the need to do that and sort of where we are on phones is obviously a very, very tough place. And so when you think of 2016, that'll be something that, you know, we've all inside the company anyways, particularly at the senior leadership team, you know, that is, I'm getting a phone call. I'm going to hang up. Hold on one second.
It's probably the senior leadership team on the line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Phones on the podcast.
Chris, we hear you about to talk about
something. Exactly right. Yeah. I think, so first of all, the phone business and selling off the feature phone business would be, I think it was the right decision for us, but a very, very hard decision. And, right. you know, along with that comes the 1 billion device sort of reset that we had to do. You know what I'm going to do?
No, Chris, this is Frank Shaw. I want to talk to you now.
I'm going to do something more technical, which would be to unplug the phone from the wall. There, you can ring somewhere else in the house and not hear. If it really is Frank, my wife can come running in and say, you know, stop talking. Anyways. That the billion device reset was sort of another one where, you know, we're really proud of over 400 million yeah. people using Windows 10, but with the phone situation, such a big portion of the billion was gonna come there. And then the last one for me, from a, you know, purely a marketing or branding perspective, is what Paul alluded to, which essentially was for me getting too aggressive in pushing out the Windows 10 free upgrade. And, you know, we know we want people to be running Windows 10 from a security perspective, et cetera. But finding that right balance where you're not stepping over the line of being too aggressive is something we tried. And for a lot of the year, I think we got it right. But there was one particular moment in particular where, you know, the red X in mm-hmm. the dialog box, which typically means, you know, cancel, didn't mean cancel. And within a couple of hours, you know, of that hitting the world, we, you know, with the listening systems we have, we knew that we had gone too far. And then, of course, it takes us some time to roll out the update that changed that behavior. And those 2 weeks, you know, were pretty painful and clearly a low light for us. We learned a lot from it, obviously. But I think yeah. if I were to call out two or three, those would be them. But there are plenty more. You know, it's
well, we have 2 hours, Chris. So
I don't think Chris does.
Yeah. No, I don't.
Yeah, so anyways, those would be, you know, those would be helpful.
It's actually really great to hear that from the inside.
It is.
And to hear what happened and how it happened. Yeah. And boy, I wish more Marcom was like that, because it really then it shows that the company is paying attention, is listening. It yeah. does, you know, from the outside, if you don't get that kind of feedback from what's going on in the inside, it looks like, well, there were 2 weeks they ignored us.
Right,
because we don't understand the. I mean, probably Paul and Mary Jo do, but average people like me don't understand the vicissitudes of change of the update and all of that stuff. So yeah, it's sure. really, I think it's really so refreshing to hear that.
Yeah, you know, we don't hit like a single button and then everything gets pushed out to, you know, whatever 400 million machines. It's done in phases, and even just doing a new release isn't something we can do in an hour. You know, it takes a little bit of time. I mean, it's amazing that we've come as far yeah. as we've come. But still, you know, when you do something like that, that's a painful window of time where you know that, frankly, your fans are the ones that are most upset. Your average consumer doesn't really necessarily
we know that
notice.
Too.
And so that's really a bummer because you never want something you do to alienate the people who are rooting for you and putting their own personal reputation on the line.
They're always the loudest, of course.
And well, and they're the ones who actually notice everything too. Right. So they hold you to the highest bar, which is as it should be. But you know, lots of highlights, but plenty of lowlights.
You know who else is a highlight? Donna Sakaar. And I think, like you, getting the information that she's shared to the insiders has been the same kind of. I have the same feeling about it, which is this is great to get this kind of communication from inside.
Yeah, communication and transparency.
Yeah.
No, the Insider Program has been just a wonderful way for us to engage with folks. And, you know, folks like Paul and Mary Jo know so much so quickly and even before lots of people inside the company know it. But the Insider Program, you know, you've got, what, millions and millions of people. I forget the last public number we've shared that we can have a really pretty good dialogue with and talk with in ways that your average Windows customer just doesn't care. But we get a level of feedback and a level of interaction that's really great. And, you know, hopefully 2017 will be an opportunity for us to show more of that feedback coming into the core Windows product itself. And that bleeds over to devices and to Office, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah. I remember last year, one of the things we talked about when we had you on was me saying, throw us a bone as Windows Phone users and tell us, come on, give us some hope. And so this year I switched to becoming an Android user because I felt like there was no more hope. So I'm getting a lot of people on Twitter right now saying, ask Chris about what Windows Phone users should be thinking at this point. And I know it's a small group. And as you said, you had to make a tough decision this year about where to go and not to go with phones. But what is your message for people who still are holding on for phones?
Yeah, well, one of the things that, you know, I remember having this conversation with you last year on this point for sure. And I'm still running the, you know, the Lumia 950. And so I'm obviously a diehard on this side of the fence too. You know, a couple of things in the near term, what I would say is, you know, obviously our OEM partners are incredibly, incredibly important for us, particularly in the enterprise space. And HP has done some excellent work on Windows 10. They, along with Microsoft, love this notion of the 3-in-1 using Continuum. You know, you've got the phone, you can connect it to your laptop, and you can connect it to an external monitor, keyboard and mouse. And for a bunch of enterprise scenarios, that's really interesting. So, you know, in the near term, we're going to continue to partner with our OEM partners and hopefully have some great devices for people who want to stay on Windows as their mobile and their phone OS. Obviously, we continue to work on the OS to make sure it works across all these different form factors. The number one question I get, and you guys talk about it a lot, of course, is, you know, what about our own first party hardware, our own phones? And there, I think the thing that you've sort of nailed in the past, but I'll reiterate, is for us, when we want to do first party hardware, when we want to do Studio or Book or Pro, the number one goal we have is to essentially try to create a new category of device that hasn't been done before, that frankly can expand the total addressable market for the Windows ecosystem. So Surface Pro was really the one that said, hey, we think it's kind of crazy that people are buying an iPad and a MacBook. You should be able to have one device that's both a tablet and a laptop. Thus, that line of Surface Pro being the tablet that replaces your laptop. With Book, we wanted to have another 2-in-1 device where it has this beautiful clipboard detached from the base. But if you want that laptop experience, you can have that. And so that's a 2-in-1. With the Studio, with Surface Studio, the line for that product is turn your desktop into a studio. Sure, it's a beautiful all-in-one, but most of the marketing work you see us, we show it, you know, being tilted down into that studio mode with that 20-degree angle. And so it can replace, you know, other devices that you had in addition to your desktop. And in all those cases, we're looking at creating a brand new category that our OEM partners can then follow behind us and do in massive volume, and that hopefully expands the number of devices that people want because we create something new. And so when we think about any new hardware, whether it's phone, whether it's tablet, whether it's desktop, you name it, HoloLens, we want to do something that hasn't been done before. We want to create a brand new category. And obviously, I'm not here to announce a new piece of hardware from Microsoft. 2017 is coming. We'll have great new things in 2017. Panos and the team are working super hard. But I think it's important or helpful for our fans to understand it. Why is it that we do this stuff? And our mental model has to be not just building another device that competes with a premium device in some category, but it's got to be different. It's got to have a different point of view, and hopefully that's creating a new category. And so that would be my answer. You know, we were obviously kind of tickled that Apple came out with the iPad Pro with a pencil, with a keyboard, and started talking about it as the, you know, as this thing that sounded a lot like ours. And in fact, their ads looked a lot like our ads. And a lot of people commented, I think that's a Surface ad, for goodness sakes. And for us, that was interesting because it was an example of us creating something that they then at first kind of said wasn't interesting, or they didn't think it was interesting. And now it certainly seems like they think it's interesting. So that's kind of what we have to do on the hardware side, I think.
You said something that I think is something I believe to be true, and I think we've discussed it on the show previously, this notion that with Surface Pro 4, or Surface Pro is the most obvious example. You folks come out with this product, and now you see all of the PC makers copying it, essentially. I mean, some of them are very, very close to the Surface Pro design. And I've openly wondered whether this was like something that you kind of suggested that you that this was the point in some ways of making Surface Pro. So in other words, were OEM partners to come out with something that was like Surface Studio, something that was like Surface Book. That is, in fact, the goal. Is what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's one of the goals. Obviously, we want to create a wonderful hardware business for Microsoft too, but primarily we want to expand the Windows market space and drive innovation. And I think we're able to spend on these products in ways that can push us into new areas. And once we've proven there's a great market for a premium, you know, $800 or $900 two-in-one that, you know, it's the tablet that can replace your laptop, we know that HP and Dell and Lenovo will see that business and they'll want to be part of that. And it's great that they're coming out with these designs that are cheaper. Maybe they don't have exactly the same premium specs or what have you, but they're creating that new category. And we're leading, in some ways, we think it's our job to kind of lead the way in this innovation and compete with Apple on the one hand, but then obviously create a bigger market for our OEM partners to, because they have such incredible scale, you know, that we don't have. They build just incredible volumes around the world and they can distribute it in every corner of the globe. And so that is absolutely part of the strategy, without a doubt. I wouldn't say it's the only strategy, but
I didn't mean it that way. But in other words, very explicitly, this is okay. In other words, there's not going to be some point where Microsoft comes back to some PC maker who makes a Surface clone or whatever and says, "Guys, this thing is exactly the same as our device. You can't do that. You do this again, not as the only goal, but this is one of the reasons."
For sure, so and you know, not being a lawyer, I won't speak on behalf of my legal team.
Sure.
you know, I would
if
say
you
that
just make a public statement to the effect that
that's right. And you know, you look
Frank
at something
Shaw
like,
on line three now.
he is on more on the PR side.
He's
at least he's
beeper.
On my team. Brad Smith runs.
I'm
the
sorry,
legal.
Brad Smith. Yeah,
exactly. Anyways, that it is absolutely part of the goal, and our relationship with our OEMs has evolved to that point where you know it's more understandable that we're trying to create some new category. Studio being the latest example, HoloLens even being another example, where we want people using Windows Holographic to create other hardware designs. We don't want to be the only hardware designer or hardware manufacturer. We'd never get to the scale that we need for, you know, billions of devices.
So HoloLens this year felt a little quiet to me, even though you guys talked about the idea of extended reality, bringing more people into the bigger pool through that view. I kind of thought we'd hear more about HoloLens itself.
It wasn't on purpose, and this is good feedback for me on the marketing side, Mary Jo. you know, we did at every one of our major events, we try to showcase a new commercial customer doing something amazing with HoloLens. You know, Rolls-Royce has done some cool stuff. Volvo has done some great stuff. Japan Airlines has done stuff. Case Western University. We've had some really wonderful commercial momentum with customers who will essentially buy a bunch of devices, but more importantly, they buy many hours with our own engineers on training them on how to build for HoloLens and envisioning what they might actually build. So the energy we have in the commercial space has been really, really wonderful, but perhaps it hasn't made it, you know, into sort of the broad external world as much as we might think it has, because we feel like we talk about it, you know, sort of ad nauseum. We feel like we talk about it all the time. We are, of course, bringing it to more countries. We launched HoloLens in Japan, so the international expansion sort of continues. But it may be, you know, it may be that we just haven't made quite enough noise to break through, specifically on Holo itself. But for me, 2016 was a year of tremendous commercial customer engagement, if not, you know, heavy, heavy PR.
So what else do you see being a big deal in 2017? Obviously, with Windows Holographic, that's going to expand out. That's something we can look forward to. We talked about Windows 10 on ARM. I mean, what else is on the roadmap that strikes you as being particularly important?
Well, you know, for us, getting the Windows 10 Creators Update done and rolled out to lots of people will be an important part of 2017. I think we'll see some cool new devices that'll be really interesting for us to showcase and talk about. I'm very excited about that. I think gaming, we didn't talk about that at all yet, is just right. So incredibly important to the company. I know Mary Jo might want to restrict the Xbox portion of the conversation, but gaming is really, really core to what we do. And I think sometimes people don't necessarily understand that. Moving our games from just being Xbox games to be these play anywhere games, and we've sort of taken the lead in saying that our first party games that we bring to market will now be play anywhere, so you buy them once and you can play them on your console and play them on Windows 10. You know, I think that's going to be a big, big deal for us next year. The integration of the Beam technology that we acquired so that we can make broadcasting just super, super easy. We think that'll be kind of a big deal for us and for the world next year. You know, we've reached this tipping point where more people now watch other people game than actually game. A lot like professional sports. You know, far more people watch American football or the football for the rest of the world than actually play it. And gaming has hit that same sort of tipping point. And that's a very interesting technology position we find ourselves in with Xbox and with Windows, because those can be quite big broadcasting platforms for us. So I think that'll be a meme for us in 2017. And then I do think, you know, mixed reality will continue to be a big, big meme. It's an interesting one, Paul, and I think you've talked about this before, where if you walk into the Microsoft store this holiday, and please, if you're near a Microsoft store, please feel free to walk into a Microsoft store this holiday. But you'll know.
Thank you for permission. I appreciate that. I've been waiting.
Totally.
I was just waiting for that invitation.
I had to do it. I waited 45 minutes. You know, I felt like it was polite. I was a polite guest.
Four days before Christmas, too.
So. Exactly. Well, one of the things that kind of blew my mind as I went through this sort of visit of a bunch of our stores the week of Thanksgiving, we do this sort of tour of a bunch of cities. It's really fun. One of the things that struck me was lots of retailers were talking about virtual reality experiences in their store, but very few of them actually worked. And we visited 40 or 50 stores, and it was amazing how many people had like a headset for me to try on to go see something, and you know, almost nothing worked. At the Microsoft store, at the very front of the right side of the store, we have the HTC Vive hooked up to a big, beautiful gaming rig, and you essentially get this great virtual reality experience. And our physical stores have seen so much traffic driven just by people wanting to line up and get 15 minutes with that VR experience, you know, with something we've curated where you can play three or four different games. They don't walk away and then buy the PC and buy the HTC. We've sold, you know, some number, but it's been relatively modest. But it's that thirst for what's next. What's that next yep. computing experience going to be? And I think augmented reality, mixed reality is probably the most promising thing, which I know to the detriment of maybe your opinion, you know, we decided to call Windows 10 the creator's update, which I took some flack on, particularly just listening to the show. So if you want to talk about that.
This hey, is I liked it. I just want to be on record. I liked it.
You did. I remember.
Yeah. Just want to go on record here.
Well, I'll just say at least you have two updates next year.
So. Love it.
Was it, though? Okay. You don't have to answer this. But
no, I want to answer this.
There must have been in the back of your minds a little bit of, we can stick it to Apple. No. This is an opening for us because Apple seems to be abandoning this pro creator group. And this between that and the studio, it sure felt like to the outside, to me, maybe they're kind of saying, hey, you can come over here. And by the way, it worked with a lot of people.
Right. You know, a couple things I would say. First of all, one of the things that's super important for everybody to know is that Windows 10 is the product. Like, the product name is Windows 10. And then because it's a service, you know, we'll do a couple of updates a year. But most people, most enterprises, they'll never see or hear the words creators update. And so Yusuf Mehdi, who runs Windows and Device Marketing on my team, you know, we were talking about what to name this update and should we keep the update names just very simple, spring update, fall update, anniversary update. You know, you can name them after dogs, you can name them after cats, you can do whatever you want. Very few people, except the people who listen to this show and are diehard fans, are ever really going to know the name of the update because it's just Windows 10. And so we felt like we had a little bit of license to do something a little more fun, a little more less boring, because we didn't think enterprises would be put off by an update name when they know that they're deploying Windows 10. And inside the Creators Update, there's a ton of stuff that has nothing to do with creativity. There's a ton of great work that enterprises care about and security work. I love the people stuff that we've done. That's one of my favorite features. That's really more of a collaboration capability as opposed to a creator capability. So we felt like we could take a little bit of license with the name because we didn't think we were just naming an update. And 6 months later or 5 months later, we start talking about another update and we can have different
names. Clearly, you don't understand how important this decision was. But if I could turn this what you just said back on its head, is it fair to say, did I hear you say, this is Yusuf Mehdi's fault? Is that what you said?
No, I take full responsibility for all naming. If it's a good name, it probably came from Yusuf, Surface Studio, Surface Book, for his name. So if it was a bad name, I made the call. I'm happy to take blame for that.
That's so fun. Not to belabor it, but you did have that whole event. I don't know who that event was aimed at, but right. with 3D Paint and the Creators That's Update. Right. I mean, there was a public event making a big deal about it.
For sure. And, you know, we know, lots of people will hear about that event. So I don't want to belittle the name. I just want to make sure I put it in context. The name of the product is Windows 10. And the fact that we have two updates a year, I think we can be a little more creative with the name of the update without it doing us any kind of long lasting harm. Yeah. Now, clearly, we picked the Creators Update because we have been on this path with the pen and with touch, with Surface in particular. And obviously, we did a huge amount of work in this thing called Project Beihai, which we eventually brought to the world as Paint 3D. And we really do think that mixed reality and three dimensions are a very interesting space for creators to explore. Lots of people will only consume them. They won't create them themselves. But we think that 3D and mixed reality is an area where we're going to take Office, where we're going to take Windows. And so from that perspective, it felt very appropriate that one of the most exciting new things about the Creators Update was this notion of creating in 3D with Paint 3D. We were launching Studio. Studio is geared towards creators, towards artists. Right. And then, you know, to echo Leo's point, the number of Apple MacBook fans who are telling us that they're more excited about the work that we're doing than they were 2 years ago or 3 years ago is quite high. And there's no doubt that for years, Apple has really had that creator community. As they focused more on the iPhone and the iPad, Perhaps they've put less of their energy on that particular community. And frankly, we've put more of our energy on that community with the book, with Pro, now with Studio. So there's no doubt we feel like we're investing deep R&D around HoloLens, around augmented reality, 3D creation with Paint 3D and other tools, et cetera, et cetera. So it made a ton of sense from that perspective. And we kind of wanted to tell the world we're very serious about this space, even if it's an update that only lasts, you know, whatever, 6 months before we name the next one.
It's a
long
great
answer.
Name.
Long answer.
It's a great name. I'm sorry.
I know it's hard. Believe me. I know it's hard. The other thing is we get to live with the names for maybe 3 months or 4 months before you guys ever hear them. So you first hear the name, you're kind of like, what? But one good test of a name is like, if you live with it for a week, how do you feel about it a week later? And that, believe it or not, that's a gut check we all do on the marketing team. Like a week later, does Windows 10 still scare you because we're skipping 9? It didn't. It felt great. You know what I mean? HoloLens.
This one's a little closer to Pentium. It's like a little longer than a week, but I agree. Like all things, you get used to it.
Two updates a year. I mean, I think that's really important that this continued strategy of, you know, it's now just a service and you're going to get updates automatically. I think that really consumers will really get that. They'll really get the sense, this is it. This is Windows. And you're just going to get these updates from now on is really great. I really love that.
For sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
But keep the feedback coming. You know, it's never perfect. HoloLens is one that internally
it's always a little alarming to be reminded that people are listening.
I know. Yeah. I hate
Even
that.
That should be the point of the show. But
No, I hate it.
Just so you know, it's not like I'm sitting in a room with a bunch of Microsoft people like listening and, you know, cursing you.
Are you taking notes is the question. Are you writing stuff? No, good.
I'm letting it wash over me.
We have plausible deniability, kids.
His heart rate's going up.
You guys do just such a phenomenal job. Look, I wouldn't be on the show if I didn't think the quality of your work is just super impressive. I really appreciate all the hard work you put into trying to explain our crazy company to the world. It's not easy.
I have a question that's not a product question for you.
Okay.
I'm very intrigued about the cultural changes happening inside Microsoft. And just a week or so ago, there was a really good article in the Wall Street Journal that talked about how a lot of the companies that Microsoft's been acquiring under Satya Nadella are having a really strong impact on how Microsoft works going forward. I'd love to hear how you kind of see that, because they talked to people who were brought into Microsoft through these acquisitions. But as somebody who's been there for a couple decades, right? How does it look to you?
Yeah, it's an incredibly changed place, staggering actually over the past 3 years, really to see how Satya has put his cultural gestalt into the culture of the company. And he talked a lot about, you know, the culture that we have. This phrase that's called, we want to live our future culture, because we know it's going to take us, you know, 5-10 years to really transform the culture of a company with this many people and this much history. But part of the way that he's done that is to really think about the talent that we're bringing in, whether it's Nate from Xamarin or Javier from Acompli, et cetera. We've you know, purchased a bunch of companies, not all massive companies, but a bunch of companies that have a far more, let me say, modern, you know, built from the ground up in the last 5 years culture. And having those people come in as senior leaders in the company and having them push for change has been actually quite effective. And I think the culture is more receptive to those pushes because of the work that Satya has done. You know, one very simple thing is we have this executive retreat every year for maybe 3 days in the spring, where the top 150 most senior people at the company, you know, go off and talk about, you know, what we want the future of the company to be. And oftentimes the people we bring in from these smaller acquisitions are not in that senior set of people, but Satya brings all the CEOs from the companies that we've acquired over the last 12 months to the exec retreat, regardless of whether they're in that sort of vice president sort of rank or not. So you've got all these you know, corporate vice presidents, but then you've got CEOs of, you know, 20-person companies or 500-person companies who wouldn't normally be at the retreat. They're there, and they're getting a huge dose of our culture, and they're giving us a huge dose of sort of an outside culture. And I think that's part of, you know, that's an example of what Satya, I think, has done. I recently did an interview at a CMO summit. I think it was a Forbes CMO summit, and all they wanted to talk about was the cultural change. And you can see it online. I go into a lot more detail. But for me, as a guy who's been there 25 years now, and I got to work, you know, with, you know, very, very senior people at the company, the huge change over the last 3 years has really been culture first, and then the products kind of follow. The outside world only gets to see the products, but as an employee, the culture is what feels just crazy different than 5 years ago. And, you know, it's a work in progress. We are not done. But that's what I've been really excited to kind of see.
There's a lot of, you know, pushback externally from people who kind of like the way things were before. And I would imagine there is internally as well. Is that something that has gotten better over time? I think Mary Jo would probably agree. And I think this is why she brought up this topic. I mean, looking at Microsoft from the outside, I see these cultural changes as being hugely positive and necessary and right timed. But do you still see, are there still elements in the company who, you know, are trying to, you know, stop the ties to open source, stop the mobile stuff, to, you know, focus on Windows, you know, focus on our own platforms, that kind of stuff. Is that still an issue or?
Yeah, I'd say that. You know, the cultural change of wanting people to be curious and have a growth mindset rather than sort of a fixed mindset and feel like they know all the answers, that is mostly broadly appealing to the employee base. Thing that culturally is difficult is this notion of behaving as one Microsoft, this notion of saying, hey, you shouldn't just stand up your own website to talk about whatever your pet project is, because it won't look like the rest of Microsoft.com, and it won't, you know, have our same privacy policies, and it won't be accessible to blind people because you just use some random piece of tech to stand up your own website. And like those things are much harder for people because they feel like they cannot optimize for what is locally most interesting in their office, in their hallway. And instead, there's a global maxima that we're trying to provide, which is, you know, the one Microsoft maxima. For people who understand what life was like when everybody was doing their own things and our websites were you know, 50 different companies as you navigate through the website, or you go to two different events and they're clearly put on by two completely different parts of the company, you know, people forget that that isn't a good situation, but it's still painful for someone to feel like they cannot locally optimize for their thing when it would help their thing right now get some traction or get some press or name your fill in the blank. So it's that, you know, it's that classic adage of, you know, if you want to go fast, you know, being alone, you can go fast, but being together, you can go far. That's hard for people. And that's a big part of the culture change that I think you'll still find is stressful and, you know, makes people feel like, oh, I don't know if I love this so much.
Well, plus the shifting priority thing, right? If you were maybe at a part of the company before that was a big focus that maybe going forward is not a big focus, you could imagine there being hard feelings there as well.
For sure. No, for sure. Yeah. So voila, that's a little bit about the culture.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, should we talk about your holiday ad this year? Perhaps?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because last year we talked about the Apple commercial you did where you had the employees walking and between the stores in New York. Yeah. But this year you have a totally different holiday ad that's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I'd love to talk about that. I mean, I guess the quick setup for this is most of our advertising is very much about talking about Microsoft as a cloud provider or talking about Windows devices. And they're very much about putting customers in the ads and telling their stories of how they're transforming using our cloud or how they're, you know, what they like about the Surface Book or the HP Spectre or the Dell XPS 13 or what have you. But once in a while, two or three times a year, we carve off a little bit of money to tell what we call a brand moment. And last year's holiday brand moment was where the Microsoft employees walked from the Manhattan flagship store down the street to that beautiful Apple store and sang "Let There Be Peace on Earth" to them. Mm-hmm. And that the Apple team didn't know we were coming, and they responded in a beautiful way. And it was really, really lovely. International Women's Day happened in March, and we launched a spot that had – we asked middle school, public school girls in New York City to name inventors and then to name female inventors. And they couldn't name a single female inventor. And our spot celebrated a bunch of great inventions by women to celebrate International Women's Day. And those are examples of sort of these moments that aren't really about selling a product or telling you we're a cloud leader, but instead really showing empowerment, because that's what our brand kind of stands for. And this year, we found seven people who had done really kind of amazing things to essentially inspire harmony. And they became a little – each one of them became sort of an internet sensation on their own without really doing anything to become an internet sensation. They were viral videos that were posted, and then they became sort of famous. And we called these people, and we asked them if they would want to come together in New York City and essentially build a mural on the Surface Studio to peace, to celebrate sort of peace. And we had an artist help these seven people sort of put this mural together. And then there's a beautiful building in Brooklyn that you can actually project images on. And we took the mural they had built, and we projected it on this building that's essentially under the Freedom Tower. And that's kind of the closing shot from the spot. So a bunch of the footage is just YouTube footage of something they did that was interesting, and then sort of showing them putting together this mural and sort of ending with the mural in New York under the Freedom Tower. So that's what we put together this year.
I don't think there's a lot of dialogue in it. So people were listening. We'll enjoy the music.
Enjoy the music.
And it says, this holiday season, we brought together a group of people who are making a difference in the world. This is their vision of hope, peace, and beauty. I'll kind of describe it. This is the mural, I guess, Chris.
Yes, that's the mural. Yeah,
and they're using the Surface
people
Studio.
People should let people be whoever they want to be.
There they are, working together on it.
I look at another person and I don't see myself as separate from them. Is what is going down.
We need our fathers and mothers.
Oh, I remember that.
To be by our side.
There's a damaged relationship between America's youth and the American police officer. We're going to change that.
I'm getting chills. Really
knowing
beautiful.
That at least one adult cares can make the difference in the world to transgender youth. Be that person.
The first passenger on board our rescue ship was a two-month-old baby.
So cool. This is really a good example of kind of the virtue combined with the ability to show the product at work. It's really, really effective. When the world seems divided, coming together can be a beautiful thing. So great. And there's the building in Brooklyn. I see you projecting it. Wow, that's cool. So everybody's going to have a chance to see that in a lot of places, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't spend a huge amount of money to put this on TV. There's a little bit of a TV buy, and it's in cinema, it's in movie theaters, but mostly it's online. And, you know, we just found it so incredibly easy to get people, if they like something, to see it online only. It doesn't have to be on a, you know, football game or at a movie theater. But this time of year, it's a nice small spot. And Kathleen Hall runs our media and advertising team, and the team just does such a nice job with that stuff. And, you know, I think it's important to note, we really tried to showcase people from sort of all walks of life there. That story of that white cop going into Florida and sort of being called on a disturbance call of kids making a bunch of noise and showing up and playing basketball with them for 20 minutes, you know, that thing exploded. You know, really, really lovely stories. So I know some people see a video like that and will take a position on it. You know, really, we're just looking to highlight people who have done pretty inspirational things at the end of the year. And we tried to be as sort of inclusive as we could, but it, you know, I love the way it turned out.
So just a tip, something I've learned.
Yeah.
Ignore Twitter. Seriously.
Well, wait a minute. But there's one exception to that rule, which is I noticed on Twitter while we were watching that video that Frank Shaw is busy right now doing something else. So,
oh, okay.
You know, keeping an eye on Twitter is sometimes a good idea.
No, but there was, a little, as is always the case, I don't think you could do anything in the world anymore where there wouldn't be some sort of outrage expressed on Twitter. Yeah. And there was a little outrage because you have a transgender woman in there. And that is absurd. And ignore Twitter because it's, I'm sure you guys, you know this, Chris, but, I think companies are starting to learn this, that Twitter is not your audience. It's not your customers. It's just a bunch of random people. And many of whom just love being outraged.
Yeah. And, our work gets, we get feedback on our work all the time. We ran a spot during a football game in Spanish, and we got a bunch of positive feedback on that. And we got a bunch of negative feedback on that, too. It was that great spot of these people who did the Book of Life, and they sort of fall in love with the Surface Book. And they have an English, we have an English version where they spoke English, and we have a Spanish version where they spoke Spanish. And we've run both of them. And, that sometimes rubs people the wrong way. But, for us, Satya has just focused so much on trying to be a more inclusive company internally so people can come to the company and do great work from all walks of life. But I also think we have to be an inclusive company with the marketing work that we do and the products that we build because, we have a huge number of people who use our products from all walks of life. And when you celebrate that, you're going to get people cheering that and you're going to get some people who say, hey, I don't love that. And that kind of comes with the territory. We try to find the right balance. But we certainly stand for, everybody loving our products and wanting to have a good relationship with Microsoft. And so hopefully that spot indicates that. That's our goal anyways.
Nice.
So voila, there it is. And you can actually read the stories of each one of these people if you go to Microsoft.com/empowering, or you can find it really anywhere on the web. We give a little clip on every one of those people, and they all have these pretty amazing stories. It's kind of inspiring.
Nice.
I am taking up a huge amount of your time on this show. I hope you guys, I assume you would have given
Listen,
me the
it's, this show's going to go downhill the second you leave, but
it is.
Thanks.
Chris, it's been really great having you. I just really appreciate your openness and willingness to communicate. Not many companies in tech or any other business are as forthright as you are. And I really think that's very useful for us. And I know our listeners really dig it.
That's fantastic. I'm really happy to do it. So thank you for having me again, and good luck with the year ahead.
That's part of the culture we're talking about, the whole way that you
do
things.
That's the new thing,
The very first thing you said, I think, on the show, or maybe it was before the show, was talking about listening to the people in the stores and what they were saying, and you guys are already thinking down the road now based and just that kind of attention to the people that are buying your products and using them and then talking about it, is it's unusual. It's nice.
It's great. Well, thank you. Keep the feedback coming. And let's have a great 2017. There's going to be a lot to talk about. Windows Weekly is going to be a busy show, I think, in 2017.
Good. We like hearing that.
Oh, I like hearing that. Yeah, there's a little tease right there.
Oh, wait. Totally. The other thing I wanted to say was that executive retreat. We'd love to do a live show from that. So if you could figure that out.
It sounds good. It's not very fancy. It's actually pretty rustic, shall I say. Nice. It's not very executive-y at all.
It's okay.
Stores do a better job. I think the stores are really the place to do the shows. Anytime you guys want to do it from a store.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
In other words, no.
The Wi-Fi. I will tell you the Wi-Fi is terrible. Like there's not a lot of tech. Well, anyways, have a wonderful holiday, you guys, and thanks.
Thank you.
You too, Chris.
Chris Capicella, it's great having you. We'll see you in a year. Chief Marketing Officer at Microsoft Corporation.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a break while we rearrange. We take that big hole in the screen out where Chris was and come back with Paul and Mary Jo and their look back at 2016 and some of the highlights from Microsoft. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For those of you who live life online, and I know that's everybody who listens to this show probably, the last thing you want to do when you're buying a new house or refiing is go back into the 19th century and have to collect paper and drag it into a loan office and beg and plead for a loan. Well, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the premier mortgage lender in the United States, is an entirely online solution designed for us, the online crowd. You can do everything you need to do. The entire mortgage approval process can be done from your couch, on your phone, or your tablet, or of course at your desk, at your computer. You know, no paper, no going through boxes of papers or anything. You submit pay stubs and checks, bank statements, whatever it is that you need, directly online with a touch of a button or the click of a mouse. And because it's all computerized, you'll get approved in minutes for a loan solution that's tailored right to your particular needs. Quicken Loans has just nailed this one. It is so great. And when the time comes that you have to sign papers, they still, unfortunately, banks being what they are, still want your this is so crazy, John Hancock on some paper. But the nice thing is they even make that easy. They send a notary public to your house with the papers, and you can do it. You still don't have to get up from the couch. You might want to put on pants, though, this time. QuickenLoans.com/windows. That's Rocket Mortgage. Keep it in mind. You may not be buying a house today. Maybe the weekend you're going out, you're looking at houses, and you say, oh, let's get this one. Or maybe you want to refi. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. And don't forget the website, quickenloans.com/windows. Still surprises me, and I'm sure it does you, that he's listening while we're doing the show.
No, so it's interesting to me that you feel the same way.
It's kind of scary.
It's like when you write a review of a product and someone writes you back and says, hey, I just bought this thing you recommended. And you're like, right. We should expect, and I know, you know, Microsoft and the PR company as well, I'll get email from these people and they'll, you know, hint at something we said on the show maybe, or kind of mention it in passing. And I don't know why it's strange. It shouldn't be, right? But it is sometimes.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's great.
It's an honor.
He said he wanted to be on again. He asked Paul and I when he saw us at Build, he's like, so am I going to be on the show again this year?
I said, you are our holiday tradition. Of course you are.
Yes, you did.
It's our new holiday tradition. I love it. I can't believe it was a year ago that he was on. I was glowing all year because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I tried to get us into the executive retreat. You can see that didn't go very
well.
That
was nice.
Try.
That was a nice try.
It sounded awesome.
Very impressive.
150 of the top executives of Microsoft and us two.
That would be great.
Microphones.
Yeah. You knew that was a non-starter.
No, you gotta ask.
So highs and lows for 2016. We covered a lot of them with Chris. I think.
We really did. Yeah.
Anything that we Mary Jo did a 20 her top 20 posts.
Yeah, I'm going to do that next week. Actually.
Oh, okay, next week. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't published mine yet, but it was really interesting to look at what got the most traffic on the site. And mm-hmm. The outrage over the forced Windows 10 upgrade definitely was hands down.
So, by the way, I don't know if this is still the case, but for some reason, my top story from this past year, the last time I checked.
The most clicks?
Was about, I think so. Yeah. Was about display scaling in Windows 10.
Oh, wow.
What?
Crazy. Yeah. Because I guess if you type in like... If you go to Google and type, let me see if this still happens. Like, if you type in Windows 10, display scaling, let me see if it comes up. The number one link is me. Yeah.
Wow.
The one that isn't sponsored. Yeah. So, anyway, weird. But anyway, I'll do that next week. Yeah. But there was a lot, right? I mean, this was a really busy year. I actually went back through my site and looked at all the articles. I had to go back, you know, hundreds of pages or whatever. But you kind of forget all the stuff that happened. I mean, it was kind of interesting to do that. But Windows 10 for me was the biggest thing, and it was 9 of the top 10 articles I wrote from last year. Last time I checked, and was most of the highs and most of the low, or the biggest highs and the biggest lows as well.
Yeah. My article about switching to Android was a big one for my site, mm-hmm. also, which is pretty predictable, I guess.
Because you're a traitor.
Because I'm a traitor, and now I'm an Android fangirl. Yeah.
she never stops talking about Android.
I know. That's all I want to talk about. The marshmallow and everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the marshmallow. I can tell you're really invested in this. You know, the marshmallow.
So invested. But you know, the other group of stories I did that got a lot of hits, and I think this is another one like the DPI scaling. It's because it's very confusing, and people are trying to have us help figure it out along with them. Is the whole Windows as a service thing and what that means, especially to IT, and also what it means to people who are on Windows 7 and 8, and how now they're getting cumulative updates pushed to them. So anything around those topics also got a lot of hits and a lot of traffic too.
By the way, for whatever it's worth, I have a follow-up to that very topic that hopefully will be out before the end of the year. I did finally get some information back from Microsoft. I find that stuff to be very confusing, more so for businesses, by the way, but still confusing for individuals as well, and how the various versions of Windows 10 are supported, and how updates are applied, and what you can defer and for how long. That's a topic I hope to put behind me in 2017. But
we'll see. You mean as in never write about it again? Or?
Yes. Like, in other words, what I'd like to do is write one thing, have it just be correct, and then be able to point to it and never have to address this topic again.
Feels like it keeps changing, though, to some extent. Yeah. So maybe it'll solidify a little more in 2017.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yep.
And then I don't know if you've looked at your look ahead kind of pieces too, but the things that got a lot of traffic for me were I did a speculative piece on what Surface Phone may or may not mean in the light of what Chris talked about, which is them getting
was that roughly out of the September time frame. Was this?
Yeah,
your,
I think it was around then.
I don't know if you wrote it explicitly, but I recall talking about that on the show where we kind of said, you know, maybe we don't think of this as a phone. And if you listen to what he said, I didn't call him on this because he doesn't want to talk too directly about specific things like this. But he talked about the X3, the Elite X3, HP's device. And then right after that said, we go to market with things that have never been done before, suggesting that a Surface Phone would not be that same thing.
It kind of felt like that,
What you're saying, you know, in other words, that we haven't been thinking about this the right way.
Right. We kind of speculated a couple times on Windows Weekly that maybe this thing we keep calling Surface Phone is a mobile device, but not necessarily a phone first. Maybe like mobile device with some phone capabilities. And I think that is where they're going to go because they're, like you said, they're trying to find categories that aren't already overly saturated. And so phones are overly saturated as they exist today. And Android and iOS win. So they have to look for something that doesn't exist or try to create something that's a combination maybe of two categories. And I think that's what this next generation thing will be. Will we see it next year or 2018? I don't know, but I feel like that's
the question. I mean, in some ways is, do they tie this horse to the Windows and ARM?
Right.
In which case we're not going to see it until the fall.
And
if that's
later.
The case. Yeah. Or later. Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, it might make sense for them to come out early with this thing, because their goal, again, is to have the market follow them. I mean, there's a possibility there. But that makes the beginning of the year interesting because we know, and he, you know, alluded to coming devices, meaning probably Surface Pro 5, probably Surface Book 2, maybe a refresh of the studio with, you know, different options, whatever.
Yeah.
But probably not a phone, right? Or probably not the Surface Mobile thing, whatever we're calling it.
Yeah.
So we still have ways to go.
I know. I wonder if in that first refresh of devices, because we keep hearing spring for that, if in spring 2017, they also come out with HoloLens 2. Because I keep thinking, they've got this whole view of expanded reality, but I think they aren't just going to let HoloLens sit as it is. I think they'll have to come out with another version of HoloLens that possibly will be lighter, maybe cheaper. Maybe have a bigger field of vision, hopefully.
And do you see HoloLens maintaining its untethered functionality? In other words, it's not like the Windows holographic device. Okay.
Right. I do.
Yeah.
I think Microsoft will like, you know how we're talking Surface Book 2? Why not HoloLens 2, right?
But you have to wonder, I mean, would that device make more sense on ARM, right?
I know. Would that it runs Intel now, right?
Right. And it's an Atom, which is kind of the...
Yeah.
You know, persona non grata over there.
Mm. If it is ARM, then it's later, right? Because even ARM is saying the first devices will be like late 2017 that'll run Windows on ARM.
And that will just be the first batch, too. Yeah. I mean, that's almost like a preview.
Yeah.
yeah. I wish that was happening quicker. I'm very, very interested to see these ARM devices and what, you know, what they look like.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting because the rumor is those devices will have something to do with Redstone 3, right? Which is fall 2017, we think.
Yep.
So you would think the features for that would start showing up to insiders earlier, of course. But what will they be running that on is the question. If, say they start enabling Windows on ARM in insiders' builds, like what will that run on if you can get at it? You know what I'm asking?
I do. That's an excellent question. I'm trying to remember if this was... I believe somebody told me that they're going to have to seed devices and possibly make them available to insiders for that very purpose. I don't think it would be a giveaway, right? I mean, maybe they give you the option to purchase pre-release hardware. Remember with Windows 8, we had that strange Samsung tablet that sat on a base and had a little keyboard. They didn't, it didn't connect together like a two-in-one. It was just two separate things, but three separate things. But maybe it'll be something like that. It's kind of exciting. I mean, it's been a while since we've done anything like this, you know.
And now with Build being in mid-May in the coming year, that makes people think, oh, what if we could get that, like, if there were prototype hardware, what if some people got that at Build?
Maybe that's where I heard this. Maybe that was the part of the conversation. Maybe that's what it was from Build.
Yeah, maybe.
They have to they have to provide a way for developers to get it, just like they did with HoloLens, right? There has to be a pre-release way, because it doesn't, you know, there's no point in running it in a virtual machine or whatever. Like, you need to see what this is like. That's the point.
Yeah.
In fact, part of the point must be to see what your Win32 apps look like on this device. I mean, I think that's going to be a big part of it this time as well. So I don't know how they're going to do this.
Yeah. So it is going to be an interesting year for sure. there's a lot going on with devices, with the next version of Windows. I don't think we even know on like cloud what they're going to be adding. Just, you know, that's harder to predict really, because it seems like they and Amazon, like Chris said, are in this two horse race right now, and everything Amazon does, Microsoft does. And when Microsoft does something, if Amazon doesn't have it, they rush to do it. So it's kind of a tip for tap feature thing with the cloud right now. SQL on Linux is next year. Don't forget that, Paul.
Wow. Slip that right in there. I just heard a grenade roll across the floor.
Boom. Ding, ding. So it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty interesting. It'll be interesting to see who else they buy. Like, we didn't really get too deep into that Wall Street Journal article, but since Nadella's been CEO, I think it had a stat in there, something like in the past 2.5 years, Microsoft's bought over 30 companies. So if they keep that acquisition pace up, it's like, whoa.
One of them cost $26.2 billion.
Yes.
And we didn't even discuss that with Chris Capasella somehow.
I know. But we didn't even touch on that.
in my own article, you know, about the year, that was the top story. I mean, not for me personally. I mean, but it's obviously humongous for Microsoft. I think there's synergy there, if that makes sense. I don't have any idea if they're worth $26.2 billion. I can't even understand it. But I will at least say, I mean, you know, Microsoft buys Minecraft, for example, and everyone loves Minecraft, but I still, in the back of my mind, wonder what the, you know, what is that? Like, what does that do for Microsoft? Now, since they've had it for a couple of years, they've actually done a great job stewarding it. They've made the educational version. There's a huge community. Minecraft usage has grown. They're doing a great job putting it out on all the platforms, so all those worries were unfounded. But, you know, okay, I mean, it's sort of like an intro to programming thing. It's a game thing. I mean, these are big things for Microsoft. But LinkedIn is, I think it meshes really, really well. I didn't think it the day they announced it. I mean, I was as confused as you could be. And then you listen to them talk about it and you realize, you know, just to put it really simply, LinkedIn is the public cloud version of the CRM stuff they have in a private cloud. And that there is synergy there, and it makes a lot of sense. And it's business related. And this is a great service for them to have, and it's a great amount of customer data for them to have. And that it really makes sense on a number of levels.
Yeah.
Not sure about the cost, but
Yeah. Well, yeah. It depends how they use it.
You don't have to worry about the cost.
I know, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know.
Presumably, yeah, I mean, they're thinking about these things.
They are. And I think it goes beyond what they're doing with Dynamics, because you can now infuse Office, too, with all the LinkedIn data. And that's when there are even more synergies across the different product lines. So I think they've thought through, you know, the training stuff that you could get, all the different parts. They're like, oh, we could do this, we could do that. And I think in 2017, we'll start to see the early pieces that actually mesh together, but I think it's something that they'll have a lot more kind of synergies as they go forward in time, as long as the acquisition works. You know, there've been a lot of articles that are out there saying Microsoft knows they haven't got the best track record of acquiring companies, especially bigger companies, and haven't always got their money's worth. And I think they're very attuned to that, and they have some plans to try to let LinkedIn run more autonomously than some of the other acquisitions. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, they always say that in the beginning.
I know.
Then they swoop in, change everything.
Although they seem to not do it with
Skype's
Mojang.
Right.
Mojang, you can't. I think, look at other gaming studios, right, with Microsoft, they leave them alone. These are a bunch of crazy programmers. You can't be messing with that.
Yeah, it pains me to say this, but because I hate Skype in many ways, but Skype has been the model, I think, for their bigger acquisitions.
Yeah.
They're typically allowed to be independent, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, something like LinkedIn, there's going to be work to integrate across the stack, but that service, I bet, will continue to exist as it did before. Mojang does. Skype, there's been changes to Skype, but Skype still is kind of a strange separate thing in my mind. And you see that elsewhere as well. I mean, and maybe that's what makes it okay, right? That they're not swooping in and changing everything. We're swapping out all the Pepsi that you have in your refrigerator for Coke or whatever.
I do have to say, it was interesting to hear Chris sing the praises of gaming and how important gaming was to Microsoft.
It was interesting to Mary Jo as well.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah.
Very.
and by the way, in case you missed what he said, Mary Jo, I took some notes, so let me just reiterate it.
Let's go over that again.
Well, we all, you know, any one of us looking back on a year like this and say, well, what were your top three or four things? We're all going to come out with our own things, and some of them will be crossover stuff, obviously. He had some interesting ones that are like Microsoft Teams, right?
I would never
have thought of that, you know, as one of the bigger things.
Me too. I was really surprised when he just threw that out there. Oh, I'm like, yep. What?
That's because there was a memo went out say, don't forget to push Teams whenever you get a chance.
No, because I think there were so many things he could have talked about. And then to pull that one out.
It was like the second thing he mentioned, right? Or the
it
first.
Was. Yeah. That was one of those you're like,
Yeah, that's curious.
But there you go. Because, see, enterprise is important to Microsoft.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He said this is a product that didn't exist, you know, 15, 18 months ago, whatever. Right, because Slack came around and then suddenly this thing happened. But I think the pro part of this from Microsoft's side is A, they believe they can do this internally, which is great. B, they've been able to do it very quickly as well. So they go from conception to inception. I don't know how that works, but, you know, from conception to fruition, whatever, in a very short period of time, which, like you said, wouldn't have been possible a few years ago or 10 years ago or whatever. I hope to never use Microsoft Teams, but that's just because I'm, you know.
Oh, you will, my friend. It's part of Office 365.
There's no Paul in team. That's all I'm saying.
As far as his interview went with us, I was trying to think if there was anything else that kind of stood out. That Teams thing really did jump out at me when he said that. I was like, oh, weird.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think, it's kind of reflective of what we've been thinking are kind of the big messages. The 1 billion reset thing, I thought it was interesting. He said part of the reason they had to do the reset, or a big reason that they had to do it,
was phone,
because when I asked, I remember when Microsoft first said they were going to have a billion devices by 2018 running Windows 10, I was like, so phones? And the people I was talking to at the time said, no, Pete, we're talking about PCs.
That's their official line. And debunked is a strong word, but I wrote an article earlier this year where I you know, when they announced this, it was in fact, we talked on the phone that day because I was driving home from Pennsylvania after, it was right after Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I went back and looked at what I had written about it, because I did the math every time they announced the number, and I never saw how they were going to get to this billion figure. And mm-hmm. my suspicion was that they had information about corporate upgrades to Windows 10 that we didn't have, and that was the little surprise, that once the free upgrade was over, these things were going to kick in on a regular basis, and that was what was going to put them over the top. Phone was mm-hmm. never part of it. I know that's their story, and you know, maybe that is part of it. I never saw it that way. I still don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because there are two, and he said both of these things too. And I the upgrade path, the upgrade volume on Windows 10, whether you're talking about total or just businesses, is unprecedented. It's excellent. And yet they still are not going to hit that billion figure, right?
They're pretty, but I bet they'll hit it close to the deadline they set for themselves.
Yeah. I always feel bad when something like this happens. It reminds me of kind of the failure of Windows Vista, in the sense that you are worried they're not going to reach for the gold anymore, right? That they, you know, it was so bold of Terry to come out and make this prediction, mm-hmm. and so terrible to have to later come out and say, actually, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you want to not be that bold. And that's right. What you don't want to see.
That's my motto. Reach for the bronze.
Yeah. Reach for the donut. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sit back and watch the other people fight. Yeah. That's,
I know.
That was a lot. That was a tough one. But he was, you know, again, Chris is awesome, as we know, and very open, just to expressing that very plainly, which I love, you know.
I know.
A lot of people might have shied away from that.
Yeah.
Well, what a great year. Happened? Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next year. Bye. Bye. Yeah. No.
Yep.
What, I guess we've talked about the mistakes. I want to talk about the mistakes Microsoft made this year.
He was pretty upfront about the mistakes.
He was, surprisingly so.
Yeah, he really was. The billion reset was one. Selling, you know, the whole tough decisions around the feature phones and the phone business, and getting too aggressive with the free upgrade to Windows 10 and that whole red X on the box.
These things all hit my, I wrote a Windows 10 recap for last year, because when I was doing my Microsoft recap and collecting all the articles, it was top heavy with Windows 10 stuff. I mean, granted, I focus on the client, but three of the four top stories for Windows 10 last year were negative, right? The 1 billion thing we talked about, upgrade gate, which we talked about, forcing people to upgrade, you know, being the thing he talked about, the red X and the deceptive practice there, terrible, kind of undermining the trust in Windows and in Microsoft. It was just a really bad thing. And then the anniversary update, which we didn't talk about, where this thing came out into the world and all of a sudden there were problems, right? There was the webcam thing and the Kindle thing, and all of a sudden this update started getting pushed back and back. And if you look at it today, it's still not completely rolled out. There are still computer configurations out there that have some driver issue or whatever it might be that haven't been upgraded to this version, which shipped in late July.
Yeah, that's me on the Acer. I still don't have it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Windows as a service is an excellent idea. I don't think it's working. I think Windows is too complex to support this kind of thing. Crapware is still a problem, although, by the way, they don't get a lot of credit for this, but there's a tool you can access from inside Windows 10 called Refresh Windows, which I actually used over the weekend on this device. And it works like PC Reset, or Reset This PC, restores your computer to a factory fresh condition, except it's not the one you got from your PC Maker. Mm. It's the one that Microsoft provides. So that means if your PC Maker put any crap on there, you're not going to get it again. And that's one of the best things that happened this year. To normal people, it sounds like a tiny little, you know, you don't even understand it. It sounds technical. Mm. But the ability to take a crapware infested laptop or whatever and just flip a switch, basically, and get rid of all that stuff that's awesome. You know?
Yeah.
Edge is terrible. Usage is down. What do you call it? The add-ins are happening slowly. the store and the Universal Windows platform are not going great. There's not been a lot of momentum there.
That's Cortana, one thing I wish we had talked about more was the UWP thing, because
like, how do you fix it?
How do you fix it? Right.
The UWP in the store is maybe a bigger problem than some people realize, because it's the same problem that we had with phone, but it's hitting at the core platform they have on the client, and it's still not moving the needle. Like, in other words, with phone, they always had this uphill battle because there was this entrenched, you know, dominant, well, two entrenched dominant players. And to kind of wind up an app store and a platform that can compete with those things is a daunting challenge, and they failed. But when they're already winning with Windows, right? And here we have this platform that everyone is using, 1.5 billion users, 400 whatever million on Windows 10, maybe 500 something million, including Windows 8X, whatever. And the App Store is just not taking off. And it might be related to the service, the Windows as a Service issue, where because Windows is this older, kind of more complex thing, this mobile thing's not going to take off. The reasons are slightly different. I mean, I think here it's just a usage thing. We don't think of this PC as a mobile platform where we have a store where we download little cute mobile apps. I mean, I don't think we have that mentality, and maybe that's part of the problem, that they didn't come out of the gate with Office and Photoshop. They came out of the gate with Bob's Notepad clone and SketchCard 2000 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they were toy apps. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, most normal people would go to the store, especially in the early days, see what was available and say, this isn't for me. This is for kids. Now I'm going to go to the web. I'm going to download Chrome. I'm going to download Photoshop. I'm going to download iTunes. And I'm going to get back to work. And I just don't know how you fix it. I don't understand how this gets fixed.
You know, I think going forward, it's going to be interesting to see, number one, if they keep just pushing it the way they're pushing it, or if they kind of retrench a little and say, you know what our strategy is? It's having our developer tools everywhere and just build with what you want and build for the platforms you want. And if you want to build UWP, okay. And if you don't, well, okay.
Yeah, but can you imagine the reaction to that?
No, I know.
Even though
they're already really, you know,
incorrect.
They're pushing Xamarin pretty hard right now. And Xamarin, in a way, it doesn't really have anything to, well, it oh, not just in a way, it doesn't have anything to do with UWP.
Exactly. Right. And that, them getting Xamarin, them getting Miguel de Casa were huge wins for Microsoft.
That was
year.
Right. Yeah. And Nat Friedman. Yep.
You know, but when you talk about misses, sorry, I'm so negative today.
No, it's okay.
The good news is,
I got a big list of those, Leo.
Yeah,
please.
But the good news is you don't have a Nokia. You don't have, was it Overture? You don't have
Accenture.
Accenture is a huge success story.
It is.
Aquantiv. You don't have these big multi-billion-dollar write-offs. And in fact, I think on balance, this has been a really, everybody agrees, a stellar year for Microsoft. One of the best in living memory.
We talked about Xbox briefly with Chris, but seriously, The Xbox story this year is unbelievable.
Well, it's better than it's been ever, right?
That's amazing, because this generation console landed with a thud 3 years ago. With a thud. This was the one, like, if you're on a submarine, you can't get an Xbox One. That's stupidity. Before they launched, where they screwed everything up and they backtracked and everything.
Then they launched
this like freaking like boat anchor tank thing that's like the size of my, you know, Volkswagen. They came out with an Xbox One S this year, which is beautiful, which is super low price. You can buy it for $199 right now in some places.
I know. You see ads everywhere for it now.
It does 4K really video.
Yeah.
Yep. HDR. Awesome. Awesome library of games. They've got a roadmap for the future. They've got Windows 10 interoperability, which spans multiple things, not just the stuff we talked about, like Xbox Play Everywhere, which is awesome, but also things like, you know, game streaming. And it's just, it's a whole awesome platform thing. At this time in the Xbox 360 life cycle, we were in what we fondly remember as the days of the Red Ring of Death, you know, where we were all sending our consoles back to Microsoft and they were spending $1 billion fixing them for us. And speaking of, you know, big write-offs, it's a completely different time. And so this thing started off horribly And they haven't just turned it around. Like, this is like serious momentum. It's really, really good. And I wish they would talk numbers, because I have to think, first of all, the second half of this year, they've been, with possibly one exception, I think it was probably November. They basically, I bet they've beaten Sony every month in the second half of this year. So I that's a huge success story. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I was like, they should get rid of this. Mm-hmm. You know, sell. They obviously can't handle it. Sell it off and let the thing run as a standalone business. And now it's like, well, okay, actually, this is starting to make a lot of sense.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Anything else? Anybody?
Let's talk about Apple's 2016, Leo.
It's been crap. It's been a crap year for Apple. It has. And what's interesting is, to some degree, this year has followed on the last couple as being terrible years for the PC industry in general. Yeah. So the fact that Microsoft has some bright points to talk about is even more, you know, important in this lousy economy for PCs.
Yeah, I'll take the here's the Windows fanboy approach to 2016. this is actually a funny way to look at it. You know, Microsoft was really smart to get out of smartphones this year, because smartphones, this 2016 was the year smartphones got boring. And it's funny, even though there were great phones from Samsung and from Apple and from Google, they're just iterative.
There's not much to say. Yep.
Yeah, there's nothing to say. Yep. We've seen it before. You pick up a Google Pixel and you're like, I've seen this phone before. I get it. You know, the camera's nice and it's a little faster. Maybe it does this thing a little better or whatever. But it's not a game-changing, life-affirming new thing. It's just, you know, that this matured very quickly. PCs are exciting. You know, Surface Studio, Surface Book, ARM on Windows coming next year. Xbox games. I know. I'm sorry. But it's exciting. So there you go.
What can you say?
It's all good, Leo.
It's all so good. So very good.
Yep.
All right. Any final thoughts before we take a break and get to the back of the book?
Not
what are you looking forward to in 2017? Chris implied that there'd be lots to look forward to.
I know. Yeah. Definitely new hardware. For sure.
Yeah, definitely. That's probably maybe the first big one. Well, in the creators update, obviously, but it's going to be a big year for Windows 10. It's going to be a big year for the hardware. It's going to be, you know, I think the show schedule they have is kind of nice, and that's kind of one way to look at the year, those different milestones. I think there are things that are not going to be huge right away, like, you know, the bot stuff and AR and Windows Holographic, but it's still very interesting, and it's still going to take a big step forward next year. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see how that stuff goes. I've got my fingers crossed and my chicken ready to sacrifice that Microsoft will fix Skype in 2017. Maybe I don't want to shoot too
much. Yeah, the AI stuff will be interesting just to see, you know, right now it feels like everything they announce, it's, oh, there's an AI connection, right? But it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out around Cortana and the chatbot stuff and how that evolves. Cortana, you know, being more available across platform, and companies like Harman, the speaker guys.
But then
guys.
There's Harman Kardon is a division of Harman as well as JBL and everybody. But Harman's doing the car stuff. In fact, we love Harman because they use they put Twit front and center in their podcast stuff and their in-car head-ins. Mm-hmm. So we love being part of that.
Cortana, play Twit.
Twit?
Yep.
My name's Twit. You are Twit. What are you talking about, Twit? Get out of here. Stop mocking me.
Yes, it is raining.
Yes. I've put that on your shopping list. That's what the Amazon always does. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm putting it on your shopping list.
You want to put it on automatic payments?
It's like, no, Amazon. I do not want to buy any more Twits. I have enough. Thank you.
I would like to return my Echo. You want another Echo? Okay.
What is that I hear?
Two more Echoes.
Actually, they're sold out.
Yeah.
They're sold out.
Yep.
Sure.
That's amazing. I think I actually am the one who bought them all.
Oh, you're not alone. I mean, people love these things.
Well, when it got down to $40, that was a sweet point. I mean, a lot of people had heard about it. I bet you they sold a million from Black Friday on just because it was $40, right? Okay. Prepare your back of the book picks because I am about to prepare my pick for you. Something everybody who has, well, let's put it this way. You're going to get some stuff for the holidays and you're going to lose that stuff. And that's why one of the things you should get is a tracker. Get it? The tracker helps you and people like me to keep from losing things. Go to thetracker.com. To learn more about the tracker, it is a quarter-sized Bluetooth LE tracking device. You put it on your keys, you put it in your luggage, you put it on your remote control, you put it on your pets. It's that small. And then you pair it to your phone. It uses Bluetooth LE, so you're going to get up to a year of battery life. I like the tracker because I can just put a new battery in it. They're cheap. You get them at the drugstore. There's those little, you know, dime-sized batteries. Boom. You're good to go. And that means I can use the tracker in all sorts of ways. For instance, two-way separation alerts. So I'm notified when I leave my phone behind, and I'm notified if I leave my keys behind. Either way, if you lose your phone, the button on the tracker, see that little button there? You press that, your phone, even if it's silenced, will go, hey, I'm over here. That is very handy, since I often leave my phone in the cushions in my sofa for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it just slides in there for warmth. I don't know. The tracker is anodized aluminum, so it's very thin, very light. And tracker also has the world's largest crowd GPS network. 3.5 million trackers shipped. And every time you hear me say that number, it goes up. They're doing something like 100,000 a week. That's all over not only the U.S. Let me zoom out. All over the world, every blue dot there is a tracker. And that means all those people are keeping an eye out for your stuff, too. See, let's say you leave your keys on an airplane in Muncie. The airplane ends up in Bombay. Well, the next time somebody in Bombay walks by your keys and has the tracker on their phone will go, oh, there's Leo's keys. And it will update the map on my phone and say, your keys are now in Bombay. Or, I'm sorry, Mumbai. And that is awesome. That means you can find stuff anywhere in the world. So, all I got to say is when you get gadgets for your family and friends and yourself this holiday season, don't forget to get a tracker for each one of them. You can track up to 10 devices at once on your phone, and it just solves so many problems. Go to thetracker.com. That's going to be the hardest thing you search for it all day. thetracker.com. And never lose your possessions again. Plus, if you enter the promo code WINDOWS when you check out with your purchase, they'll throw in a free tracker Bravo for you. Get some for your friends, your family, your loved ones for the holidays, and you'll get one free too. TheTracker.com. Don't forget the promo code is WINDOWS. That lets them know you heard it on Windows Weekly. And gets you a free tracker Bravo with your order. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, back of the book time. And let's start with Paul, your tip of the year. Yeah, not to put too much of a burden on it, but the tip
so by the way,
of the year.
I looked at doing that. I actually went back and started looking at old episodes to see if there was a best tip from the year, and it just didn't really make too much sense.
They're all so good, Paul.
or they're all so completely irrelevant. It's hard to say.
Well, let's do a tip of the week then. How about that? We can do that.
Yeah. I will do that. In fact, I have two. If you're an Xbox gamer, Mary Jo, it's the end of the year. And
she needs this one for sure.
Mike, the way to find this is to search for Xbox Game Crest. And it's basically like a coat of arms kind of thing that describes your activities.
Can I put on my blazer?
You probably could. But they have some interesting stats associated with this. So, for example, I only earned 1,320 gamer score this past year. But
what?
That puts me in the top
28%. You loser.
Well, I play online. I unlocked 55 achievements, which is, by the way, exactly the average for the community.
Wow.
I don't need to be told this, but I was told that Call of Duty Black Ops 3 was my most played game of the year.
How many hours?
It doesn't say in here. Leo?
It's got to be thousands, right?
No, it's days.
It's days. It's not hours. It's days.
I probably spent a month of my year last year playing this game.
Wow.
The interesting thing about this to me is the year before my most played game was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. That's an older game, and it was on the Xbox 360. And the reason that's true is I didn't like Advanced Warfare so much. I spent the subsequent year just playing the old games over and over again. Yeah. And it was probably a close tie with some of the other games. So you can find that on the Xbox website. But just search for Xbox Game Crest. This other one, Raphael tweeted this right before we started the show, and it's going to be hard to explain, but AliExpress, which is like a Chinese shopping site, which is a great
source. It's like Alibaba, right?
Yeah. I've actually bought a bunch of stuff.
By the way, here's I just want to show you the reign of Chief Twit Leo.
Nice.
It's going to be so pathetic.
So, oh, geez. Wow.
is that low?
No, that's
gamer
not too
score
bad.
Of 705.
Most played game.
46
Odd
achievements.
World, New and Tasty.
I love Oddworld New and Tasty.
You know what's funny is you have a setting I don't have. It says your most valuable achievement in that game was Terrifying Encounter.
Yeah.
I think the problem was that my top game didn't have valuable achievements.
Sorry.
That's something they added. Yeah.
I was better last year. I was in the top 29% last year. This year I kind of slacked off. Only 207 hours.
Come on, Leo. You got
It's kind of cool. Now, what can I do with that crest? Can I put it on stuff?
I don't know. It doesn't seem to make any
sense. Download my crest and share it.
Yeah, you can download.
And then, what is my Latin? It says "Gladius me vocat."
Yeah. So actually, here's the interesting. Okay. So now that we're on this topic, actually,
I'm sorry, I have to pull you back to that.
No. It's fine. now I'll explain it. If you select some, like for example, the butterfly wings in the background.
Yeah.
If you click on the butterfly wing.
Yeah. Oh.
Now what you can do with those arrows on the right is you'll actually see the different elements of the crest. And so I believe this thing is dynamic and is based on the games you played the most, et cetera. But you can actually customize it if you want different stuff. And so I believe this is based on your profile originally.
So you don't want to change it.
But you can if you want to.
Yeah.
But you can also see what the things are, like what the different
This is cool.
So
you can customize.
You can design your.
I always wanted a family crest. I'm telling you, I'm going to put this out and put it on my blazer.
Yeah, there you go. Like an admiral's jacket kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, yep.
So I got the butterfly wings, which means ingenuity. We'll look inside. We took a look inside your brain. There's meth explode. Oh, math. I thought I said meth. Meth exploding everywhere.
It's raining math in your head.
It's raining universal truths and infinite permutations. Wow. I'm going to stick with ingenuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of them are complimentary. It's not like one of them says you're a terrible gamer, you know. It's just, I don't know.
I've changed though. I don't want to change it. I want it back to the way it was.
I think if you just reload the page.
Refresh it? Okay.
Yeah, so.
Don't remember this, Microsoft.
Granted, I have awesome eagle wings on mine, but
you
this
have,
is pretty good.
I'm butterfly. I'm ingenious. You're a killer.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Moving on.
No, okay.
Meth is hard.
Gaming key to Microsoft's future.
Yeah.
Sad. So sad,
I'm
people.
So glad to hear you out of those words. Next year on this show, Mary Jo is going to be talking about how she spent her year playing Minecraft on an Xbox One on her new large screen TV.
We know. I'm sharing this on Twitter or Facebook right now.
And I would say, Mary Jo, since you are going to be getting into the Xbox One, this is the best time to buy one.
Is it? Huh.
Yep. The sale prices are incredible.
Paul,
good to know.
She also has to buy a TV.
Exactly.
She doesn't have a television.
She'll get there. Baby steps, Leo.
Baby steps. Can we get her a radio?
Guys, let's not get crazy.
Probably have a radio app for Android you could
I'm
get.
I'm sure they do.
Oh, boy.
I'm posting it to Facebook. There you go. Thank you, Paul, for that. That's the best tip of the year.
Wow.
The reign of me.
Yes. This one's a little harder, even harder to explain. So yes. AliExpress.
It's Alibaba, right?
Shopping website, not from Germany. Yep. And they, Raphael tweeted this today, but they sell sticky notes that look like Windows era dialog boxes, except that the message part is blank, so you can write a note on it because it's a sticky note, right? So they're beautiful. I have a link to them. Do you mind clicking on it so you can just show it on the screen? I know. I'm sorry. they're so awesome looking.
I saw a picture of this morning. What is that?
Close my browser. All right. Opening up the browser so Paul can show his thing.
Well, it's a hard thing to describe audibly, but if you saw it, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's awesome. They're Windows XP styled, which may or may not be what you're looking for, but they're still pretty cool. And they're cheap. They're like, a buck.
I can't get past this thing. Oh, there it goes. It was trying to get me to download OneNote on my phone.
OneNote's a lot better on your mobile device. Send yourself a text message with a link.
I already have it on my mobile device. Can't they figure that out?
Please.
Don't you know?
A key pet peeve of mine.
Oh, it's doing it again. Now it's back. I just got rid of it. Carry your notes with you wherever you go. To get OneNote on your phone, enter your phone number. We'll send you a link. I'm not giving you my phone number, dude. All right. Back to, was it the fun Windows Era Dialog stickers?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Oh, what do you stick them on? That's funny. They're like sticky notes.
Yeah, they're literally sticky notes.
Oh, this is fun.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
And you can create your own message?
Yeah, you write on it.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Oh, I'm buying these.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Thank you, Alibaba. And it looks like you can write it in Chinese, too.
Well, it's a Chinese website. Okay. You don't have to. I don't think you're restricted to Chinese,
Does it speak English? Okay.
It's just a piece of paper. This is paper with glue on the back. It's
just free shipping to the United States. Estimated delivery time 20 to 38 days.
Yeah. It's not going to be here in time for the holidays.
No, but just in time for Easter.
Exactly. Arbor Day, maybe.
Yeah, Arbor Day. It's a big Arbor Day gift. I do like this. They're 20 cents to a buck a piece. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, I think it's like the little.
You get a book, I hope. Yeah.
Hopefully not per sheet.
That would be a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, 60 pages you get.
Okay.
That's kawaii. Cool. So it's Japanese. Kawaii. Planner, sticky, stationery, they put every word in the title just in case you're searching for materiel escolar.
Yep.
Wow.
Which is a kind of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, I love escolar. I always get it breaded or in a tamale. 60 pages per set, system error memo stickers, pack, post-it, kawaii, planner, sticky stationery material, escolar, 2016 new school supplies.
This is how a shopping site should always be.
I know. You know, Alibaba is a hoot.
Yeah.
It's a hoot. It's a hoot in a hell. Hoot in a handbasket. Phone frills. You need some phone frills. Oh, Paul, I could see you in these shorts. Celebrate Chinese New Year with some festive trimmings.
Festive trimmings.
Look at the jazzy home items. Jazzy.
I used to buy, I bought some Lumia accessories from this site in the past.
Yeah. It's amazing. Do you think they have a giant warehouse full of crap?
I do. In fact, I'm pretty sure one of them has been on the news on fire in the past year.
I found my gift for Mary Jo.
Excellent.
It's a CD player AM/FM radio LCD display 4-watt speaker in the shape of a soccer ball.
And you know what, Mary Jo? Because that thing has a screen, it could be a Cortana device.
It could be.
It's a Cortana.
Could be.
Insert CD now. It's only $71.99. Oh, I'm sending you that.
All right. I'll keep an eye out.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Oh, Lord. Well, at least when it's stolen from your stoop, you won't
be upset.
No one
will care.
Yeah. Right. I think it's app raisin time.
They'll bring it back.
What was the top app of 2016?
You know what? Okay, so first of all, the app raise. I, I, I thought of this today too. I wish I had asked those guys for that exact thing. I don't know. But the App Raisin mobile app pick of the week is Site. Well, it's actually, I think it's called, it doesn't matter what it's called, Site by Camera 360. It's a new phone. Hello. It's a new camera app for Windows phones. It works on Windows Phone 8, I think, 0 and up. It's supposed to be awesome. I'm not going to use it.
New York Times says it's one of the best camera apps for Windows Phone 8 devices.
For some reason, it's in the, like, right at the top of the charts this week. So if you do have a Windows phone still, God bless you. You should look at this app.
How many copies do they have to sell to be at the top of the Windows phone charts?
Yeah, 17-ish. It's really hard to say. But I did look back over my app picks from this year to come up with a top app pick of the week.
Yes.
And it's Pocket, which is a way to save articles and columns and things.
Love the Pocket.
And then access them from every device, any device. And I use this thing all the time. In fact, actually, I can bring this up. When the show was starting, I had this in there hours ago, and I got an email from Pocket, and Pocket sent out their end of year thing. And according to Pocket, my end of year roll up, whatever, says you are in the top 1% of our readers for the year.
Wow.
You read 1.5 million words, which is the equivalent of reading 33 books. So I use this thing a lot. I use it a lot. And the way I use it is, you know, you're browsing around the web, like I'm sitting in front of a computer and I see some like long article on whatever website about whatever topic, and I want to save it and read it later in a more comfortable way. You know, you save it to Pocket using the browser plugin, which you get on any browser, including Edge. And then I'll read it on, usually on an iPad or my phone. And it's just such a great way to collect stuff like that. And you can, I don't do this too much, but you can you can add like topics to them as well. So if you wanted to see, like I do set aside travel articles separately, but most of the other stuff I don't. But if I just want to look at, I want to read some travel articles, I can look at the travel view and see all the articles that are built in. And Pocket is free. It's incredible and it works great. And I love it. And it was really good timing. They sent that and I really do use it.
I do. I use it not as much as you, but I do use it all the time. I have a pocket bookmarking button on my Chrome toolbar, and because it happens a lot that you look at something and you don't want to read it, you know, right now in the subway or in bed or whatever. So you bookmark it for later. It's great. You do better than I do because it sounds like you actually read them later.
Not everything. You know, it's funny, when I first got it, I sort of thought I would keep up on it, like I would like finish what I had in there. But the truth is you could waste hours. You just go to their recommended view. I actually browse around the web and do stuff that way. But sometimes when I'm instead of reading, like as a sort of way of reading, you can just look at their recommended stories and you can add them to Pocket or not. You can just read them in place. And I'll spend time reading in Pocket just in that view.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tremendous resource for people who want to read. And it's a great place to find high quality articles from anywhere, but if you think about like long form nonfiction stuff from, I don't know, Vox or Medium or whatever, I mean, there's a bunch of that stuff out there. And no matter what you care about, if it's self help type stuff, there's a lot of that stuff. You know, how to be more productive, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. News stories, obviously, it could be anything. I mean, I have stuff in there about programming, about travel, just about anything you could imagine. It's such a, and they have a great, and videos too, by the way, although I don't do a lot of video. They have a great reading view as well. It takes away all the crap you see on the web. Mm-hmm. I can't recommend it enough. It's fantastic.
You know what? I wish they had. Instapaper used to have this. They've kind of replaced Instapaper, put them out of business.
Yeah.
But Instapaper used to have this where it would send your saved articles in an email, I think once a day or once a week, to your Kindle.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then you could read it on the Kindle. I wish they did that. Because
That's a neat idea.
I bet I could do an if this then that.
I have literally in a sitting done this thing where I see it. I'm on a laptop and I see it, an article, and I send it to, I put it in Pocket, and then I turn over here and I put it on my phone and I actually just read it on my phone.
Yeah.
This is something about the handheld form factors where it just makes, especially with the reading view, you know, the article view as they call it.
Yeah.
It's great. Getpocket.com, I think, is the address.
All right. Is that it for you? Do you have anything else?
I'm done for the year, Leo.
Go home and enjoy. That means it's time for Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week, though.
Yes. My Enterprise Pick is about something that Microsoft said would be available this calendar year, which is not going to be available this calendar year. We've been talking about this for a while. Microsoft's been working on integrating OneDrive for Business and SharePoint so that they sync. And it seems so like it that syncs. Is something you would assume already exists, but it does not. And Microsoft put out a little blog post quietly this week and said, guess what? We're not going to make our goal of getting this out this calendar year, but instead we think we will have this out in January. So this is the sync capability, like I said, OneDrive for Business and SharePoint Online Document Libraries. A lot of people are waiting for this feature. It's one of the most awaited features of the year, I feel safe saying, given how many people ask me, is it done? Is it done? Is it done? It's not done, but it's almost done. The other thing that Microsoft talked about in the same blog post is for people who are using the OneDrive Sync client for Mac and don't want to get it from the Mac App Store, you now can download this directly from Microsoft. And this is something that a number of IT pros may be interested in because they don't want to go through the Mac App Store to get this in bulk for people at their company. So now you can actually just go get it from Microsoft's site. Another thing that I'd like to mention on the you're not getting this year front
you're like the Grinch.
Is Microsoft Gig Jam. You guys probably have remember we've talked about this a couple times on the show. Gig Jam is this new collaborative application and service that Microsoft talked about first 2 years ago. They talked about it being a way of getting work done. It connects your software as a service apps together in a way so that you can do things like show somebody an email without giving them the email, just, you know, crossing out the parts you don't want them to actually have, but they can still see it. It's a whole new way of work, as they like to talk about it. Well, that also was supposed to be out this year in general availability form across platform, and it now also is not done yet. I haven't got an exact date on when this will go GA, but I'm thinking sometime next year, 2017. So if you're waiting for Gig Jam's GA, it's not this year. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
GA. Yeah.
Gig Jam GA. Yeah, say that 10 times fast.
TBD on that GA.
Yeah. Jamming so sorry, bad, kind of downer picks for Enterprise this week, but it's good to know where you're at if you're looking for certain apps.
Yeah. Codename?
Codename. So I mentioned earlier on the show today, SQL on Linux. SQL Server for Linux, Microsoft has actually got that working and it's in preview form at this point. But we didn't know, or maybe I just didn't remember the codename. The codename for SQL Server on Linux is Helsinki. Why? I have no idea, other than it's a place name.
Because that's where Nokia is.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but what I don't think they're connected with this in any way. But the reason it's the codename pick this week is Microsoft's been putting out a bunch of blog posts on how they brought SQL Server to Linux. And there's also a Channel 9 video out about how they did it. And if you're somebody who's very intrigued about the history of things like Midori, Drawbridge, all these Microsoft research projects about bringing different operating systems across various platforms, you probably want to go check these posts out. Because they used a lot of these technologies, and even some of the people who were on Midori, in particular, a guy named Slava Ox. I'm sure I'm butchering this guy's name. Slava OKS. He is a guy who's very famous in the SQL Server community. Also worked on Midori for a time, and he has done a couple posts this week about how we got Project Helsinki to actually work using Drawbridge. So if you're somebody who's into code names and operating system history from Microsoft, you may want to go seek those out on the SQL Server blog and on MSDN Channel 9.
Nice. Helsinki. And I am very touched by your beer pick of the week this week.
Yes.
You picked a local.
I had to go with a local.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one more big bad beer to close out the year. So I picked something from Lagunitas, which isn't their usual IPA that a lot of people know. This is a beer called Willet. It is a whiskey barrel aged imperial stout.
And I can assure you, it will.
It will.
Will it?
It will.
They call it on their own website a big, dark, and scary barrel aged beast.
Ooh.
11.7%. So not that scary. You know, you can drink this. In fact, I have. Made in Kentucky Willet Distillery bourbon barrels. It's delicious. Chocolate, coffee, all the things you think of in a bourbon barrel aged beer. A little smoky and very drinkable. Mm. So if you have a chance of finding this one, Leo probably will, since you're right next door to Lagunitas.
I think there's a keg right outside, actually.
There may be. Yeah. I would encourage you to seek it out.
Mary Jo, I have a request for the coming year. If you could please, please find a low carb beer that doesn't suck.
Okay.
You know,
there's not no such this. Thing. Yeah.
I know. It's no, not going to be this.
You know what? There are some session beers that they're getting better and better. They actually taste like real beer, and they come in around 3-4% that are much lower carb.
Yep.
Okay. I saw that, Paul. You're on the you're on a zero carb diet. Good for you.
So, I tried this before, you know, but
you already look
changed.
Better. I could see you look good.
I don't know. So, Carl Franklin, who we both know very well, mm-hmm. has lost I think 100 pounds doing this over a year, and the thing he's done as a programmer is he's taken a scientific approach to it and measuring, monitoring, figuring out how to get over humps, and he does a podcast which is incredible. Called Two Keto Dudes, and so he's like he doesn't know it because I haven't really told him yet, but he is my guru now for this stuff. Yeah. So I'm going to try to.
Steve Gibson's the king of keto, I think.
Yeah,
but
it's not surprising that people who are technical would be into this because it really is the ultimate in life hacking in a way.
The first time I ever heard of it was Cory Doctorow, and he did it 10 years ago. He called it biohacking.
Yeah,
and you're right. I think it does lend itself very well to a kind of technical mind because you feel it is. It's like hacking your body.
Yep.
That never worked for me. I was in ketosis months.
Nothing has ever worked for me, and I did the same thing. I did lose, I think, 27, 28 pounds several years ago doing this. But you hit those plateaus, and you get frustrated. He has strategies for getting past all that stuff, so...
I need to do it too.
They're hard, you know. Seriously. We're going to have turkey on Christmas Day, right? So I can't have stuffing or potatoes or whatever. We do like a fondue thing on New Year's Eve, which is bread and cheese. And so mine's going to be some strange experiment.
Celery
with
sticks,
pork rinds, and cheese.
No, I do celery sticks. You can do celery sticks. Aren't I don't have any carbs in them, do they?
I'm thinking about just eating the cheese with a spoon. You know,
that's good too. That's good too.
Anyway,
I think I would have a heart attack if I did that, to be honest with you. I might lose weight, but I'd have a heart attack. So.
See, that's the thing. Like, actually, this stuff is not unhealthy in the way we think it is.
So they say.
Well, but that's the science. I mean,
No, I've read all the Gary Taubes books and everything. And Steve's big on this stuff. But
I noticed Steve doesn't have an ounce of fat on his body.
Steve, it's the funniest thing because I don't think he's ever been fat. I mean, the guy is a rail.
I think between the two of us, we have one average size man.
Yeah. So, you and I both. Yeah. I'm the Jackie Gleason of tech.
Oh, wow. Guys, come on.
No, Paul is very handsome, a very handsome man, if I do say so. And and I think you have lost, right. You must have lost weight because you look good.
I don't
good.
Know.
No,
I'm not. So one of the weird things
you don't weigh yourself, right?
I'm not going to weigh myself.
You shouldn't.
Because I think that's the path to destruction. Like I don't want that to be my metric,
right?
So I'm going to try to maintain ketosis and lose weight and
good.
Well, lose weight. I mean, incidentally, I guess, but not pay attention to it.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, actually.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I've never been successful at anything like this, so we'll see.
Yeah. Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott, what a year it has been for Windows Weekly. You guys are fantastic. It's been a year of great successes all around, starting in the beginning of the year with Chris Capicella, ending with Chris Capicella. What a great way.
He capped our year, as we might say.
He did.
So many highlights, though. Mary Jo Foley and Paul in Amsterdam. Mary Jo in the HoloLens. That was amazing.
Couple Mary Jo slapping the shit out of me in Atlanta.
Yeah, that really? Too. Slow down, Eeyore. Who'll forget that? Of course, a couple of visits to the Microsoft store in Manhattan. Those were great. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun this year. And I don't think I'm – I think I'm speaking for everybody who listens. This is really the show to listen to if you want to know what's going on in Microsoft and hear a really always stimulating and interesting conversation about the business of Microsoft.
And you can check us out on Pinterest. So you can
back on. Yeah, Paul's on Pinterest. Yep. He's at therot.com, THORTHY. How do you spell that? T-Rex, THURROTT. It's double good, therot.com. He's at therot. His books are at leanpub.com. And you'll catch him in a bacon bar somewhere in Dedham. In the dead of night,
right.
In Dedham.
Dipping his bacon in the cheese.
No, there you go. That's what you do with fondue. Oh, yeah. Bacon.
Bacon. That's actually not a bad idea.
Wow. Dr. Atkins would be proud.
I'm going to take some pictures of my various. I'm going to try bacon. Is interesting.
Meanwhile, Mary Jo Foley can hardly keep it down. She joins us every week from allaboutmicrosoft.com. And is a beer connoisseur, and both of them are on Twitter, which I'll never understand. But in any event.
It's self-loathing, Leo.
Self-loathing, yeah. I was sincere when I told Chris, you know, don't pay attention, because that's where people are upset. That when they're upset, they go to Twitter. That's the outrage corner.
There is nothing that won't insult somebody.
Yeah.
And you know, you can make a joke about anything, and someone will come back with, you know, I know someone who died from that.
It happens all the time.
Or whatever it is. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, there's nothing that isn't taken personally that, you know, it's, I don't know. This is kind of PC thing, I think, that's ruining the planet, frankly. But,
you know,
yes.
It's fine. Just, we don't have to read it.
Yeah.
Paul and Mary Jo won't be here next week, the 28th, but we will have a brand new show. It's a best of. We, our editors and our lovely viewers and listeners, have compiled their favorite moments from last year. And I'll be there kind of giving you the blow-by-blow, and it should be a lot of fun. So tune in next week, and then we'll have a brand new, fresh show for you January 2, 3, 4. January 4th. In fact, it'll be our CES preview show, I guess.
Yeah, I'm flying to Vegas that night.
Yeah.
Oh, man, do you have to go to CES?
Self-loathing. How many times do I have to say it?
He doesn't have to. He wants to.
I fought this and won for years, and this year I had to do it.
Did they draw lots?
No.
Short straw. I'm going to Vegas.
Oh, man.
That's a sign of a senior tech journalist. You don't have to go to Vegas for CES.
Well, guess what? I just got demoted.
Yeah, apparently. No, I'm glad you go so we don't have to. Really, that's the truth of it. I'm very grateful to you, Paul.
Yeah, thanks.
No, seriously.
I'm going to do what I call the Vegas drive-by. So,
all right. Well, we'll talk to you then. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Windows Weekly appears live on the air. If you want to watch live, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. You can, you know, you'll see the unexpurgated version with all the errors left in.
Unexpectorated.
Unexpectorated version. And then if you prefer not to, you want to want the sausage, not see how the sausage is being made, you can always download copies at our website, twit.tv/WW. On YouTube, youtube.com/, I think it's Windows Weekly Show. Actually, just go to youtube.com/twit. All the shows are linked there. youtube.com/twit. Or use your favorite podcatcher and subscribe. That's really the best way for lots of reasons. If you subscribe, you'll get every episode. You can listen at your leisure. You can stop in the middle and take a break. Sometimes people need to do that an hour in. They go, I'll listen to the rest tomorrow. Just make sure you do listen to the rest, because there's always good stuff, especially at the end of the show. That's when it really falls apart. I don't know what else to say except have a great holiday. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And I will all be back. The three of us will be back in 2017. Thanks for joining us on Windows Weekly.